Lots of plans for what's known as the Troost Corridor have been written up by coalitions of neighborhood groups, developers, urban design experts, and city officials. But here on the corner of 31st and Troost, where people are getting on and off the bus outside of Operation Breakthrough, you'll find plenty of ideas on the ground for what could and maybe should happen around here.
More jobs, more opportunities. For real, for real. I mean, that's all it is, you know. It's like a lot of guys looking for some money, but there's not no opportunities to get it either.
I'd just say another pantry, like, for the community.
More clothes stores, like, just in general. Like, there's a Family Dollar right here, but that's, like, pretty much the only grocery store unless you go all the way down there.
More shopping than I was told as a child, excuse me, how shopping was here galore, and like, right down the street was a TGY. It's not there no more. Russell Stover's.
JCPenney's, Isis Theater here.
Walt Disney Studio was there. Well, that was way before I was born.
Clean up, definitely. I think there needs to be a little bit more awareness around here.
It's already changed so much. It's way more colorful and lively and family friendly now with the bus stops and everything in here. If I were to imagine anything else, maybe get rid of some of these old dilapidated buildings. In abandoned buildings, small businesses, great for the community. So I would definitely like to see maybe more life because it's really desolate.
I'm Gina Kaufman. Today on KCUR Central Standard, we're going to hear what's happening on Troost right now. But first, why the exciting new plans of the recent past don't entirely seem to have reached fruition. For that, let's turn to Daniel Serta of Insight Planning. Hi, Daniel.
Good morning.
In 1998, the city's planning and development department released an extensive plan for the Troost Corridor. In 2003, the South Town Council initiated a Troost Corridor action plan. And then in 2013, in a larger sustainability effort, there was something called the Troost Corridor Final Report. You'd think the final report would be the end of it, but in 2015, we get something called the Troost Overlay District. Why are there so many different plans for one street?
Well, I think at one level, anytime you see that level of planning energy and initiative focused on a location, that in itself, I think, is a barometer.
Of what?
Of interest, of advocacy, of activity on the ground, of responses from residents. Sometimes it's because of people not, I think, in the way you heard some of those voices saying, there's not the level of activity, there's not the level of opportunity, there's not the level of services available. And so there are unmet needs and desires that a community has.
So as measured in what we just heard by something like vacant buildings or lack of commercial activity.
Exactly. I think one of the things that's really interesting about the Troost Corridor is that on both sides of Troost, despite its historic role as a dividing line within communities in Kansas City, there are active neighborhoods. There are neighborhoods that are very dynamic. There are neighborhoods that are very heavily populated. So, as I said before, there's no lack of unmet needs or unmet services there. And there's certainly a lot of desire. I think the fact that you see the sort of perpetual cycle of initiatives happening is speaking to the fact that there are needs there that continue to go unmet. Now, there
and
are
people who are interested enough that they're advocating for those
absolutely
needs.
And again, I think that's a very healthy barometer of activism and interest on the part of neighborhood groups. But the other thing is, I mean, there are, despite similarities in wording and, you know, planners and policymakers and others, we use a lot of verbiage, we use a lot of jargon. There are differences in substance and approach in all of those different reports. You see, there might be some that are a little more oriented towards housing needs, that are more oriented towards social needs. There are studies that are a little more oriented towards physical planning. And it's really, you know, seeing all of those as complementary pieces in a patchwork quilt of policy approaches that have to be taken.
So are they're all active plans?
Well, it's not that they're all necessarily active plans. I mean, going to the specifics, I'm not certain how many of them are considered, you know, formal active plans by the city. I mean, anything that's formally adopted by the city council is a formal statement of policy that would need to be followed. But what I'm saying is that they're, you know, each of those initiatives probably had a slightly different focus in terms of its objective and its aims.
From the perspective of someone who's been in newsrooms for a lot of the time that these plans have come up, it seems like you hear a lot about a plan and then people just kind of stop talking about it and start talking about a new one. Why? What happens when we stop talking about a plan? What's going on there?
Well, it depends on what type of plan it is. Give you a quick example. The most recent example you gave, the Troost Avenue overlay, that was adopted as an ordinance by first the Planning Commission and then the City Council back in 2015. That is now governing law. It's adopted as an ordinance. It's a set of requirements that have to be followed by all future development within the Troost Corridor from 24th Street to Volcker Boulevard until and unless the City Council repeals those requirements.
What are some examples of the requirements you'd find within there?
There are requirements in the Troost overlay that govern issues like the orientation of buildings that require buildings to be very closely oriented to the edge of the sidewalk, to the edge of the right-of-way, to create a more dense, more walkable, more urban condition. There are requirements that relate to the scale and the architectural design of the buildings. There are requirements that limit the adverse impact of parking requirements on the walkability of the corridor to try to promote a more transit-oriented, pedestrian-friendly corridor in the future. The entire thrust of the overlay is really in, as future development comes along, and development always happens, no matter where you are, unless you're talking about a really large, you know, sort of Cerner-scale development of, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars and, you know, dozens of acres of land. Typically, urban development happens very incrementally, site by site, and a tool like an overlay is really intended to make sure that as those developments are proposed incrementally, they follow requirements that are similar, they follow requirements that are consistent, and the result that you get is predictable and meets with the underlying desires that really guided that. And one thing I think is really important to underscore about the Troost overlay is the Troost overlay was directly the product of neighborhood activism and initiative of a whole range of groups throughout the Troost corridor coming together and saying, we need a higher standard for development that happens in this corridor in the future.
I want to hear more about those efforts, but first, I mean, just to tease out some of the things you mentioned mm-hmm. are now requirements, like that there are requirements that are aimed at mitigating the effect of parking on pedestrian activity. Mm-hmm. Can you explain that a little bit more? I mean, what kinds of parking interferes with pedestrian activity, and sure. and why is that a particular concern on Troost?
Well, within zoning, any particular land use, whether you're talking residential or commercial, and residential and commercial at different scales, has parking requirements associated with it. That means that a particular proportion, depending on exactly what's been proposed in terms of development, a certain proportion of the land area on a site is going to have to be devoted to parking. And in this city, it's typically surface parking. So parking can really be very invasive in terms of the amount of land that it consumes, especially in an urban corridor. There was a distinct policy preference stated by people within the communities around the Troost Corridor, and it was recognized and encoded, so to speak, in the ordinance by the City Council that said the Troost Corridor needs to be a more pedestrian-oriented corridor. And the result of that is the idea that, for example, if you're building a residential building, there are limitations on how much parking you can locate there. The parking has to be located to the rears of the structure. You cannot do things like create an excessive amount of parking that fronts directly onto the street or an excessive number of curb cuts that intrude into the street. Because, again, from the perspective of a pedestrian, if you're walking down a street and every 50 yards you're walking across a curb cut, you're potentially in conflict with vehicles that are going to be trying to turn into parking lots in front of you as you're walking down the street, and it makes an uncomfortable walking experience.
Daniel, why do we want more pedestrians on Troost?
Well, the underlying thought is that the character of the businesses needs to be oriented to the needs of the immediately surrounding neighborhoods. Those destinations need to be walkable. We need to have sidewalks and pedestrian amenities on the street, a quality of streetscape that makes it a comfortable place to walk. One of the corollaries to that is one of the kinds of things that will help those businesses in those locations succeed. If it's easier for people to walk to them to get to and from those businesses via transit, those businesses are therefore more likely to succeed in those locations.
So looking at maybe the past 15 years or so, because that's the time frame that we're looking at when we see all of these different plans popping up for Troost, what do you think are some of the most significant moments or milestones in that time period, you know, on the ground? Things that have actually happened.
Sure. Well, I think it's interesting you use the word milestones, because I don't know that I would necessarily mark any of them in that way. And it goes back to the comment you made before about, you know, you hear about a plan and you don't necessarily hear about anything after it's announced. There, again, urban development in a corridor like Troost happens very incrementally. It's almost one building at a time, unless there's some large, but very much larger scale development that's proposed. You don't necessarily hear about every time in the media, every time somebody pulls a permit to rehabilitate a building, or even necessarily to abolish a building.
And then one building wouldn't be a milestone.
One building wouldn't be a milestone by itself, but it's the accumulation of those incremental investments that are happening over time. It's most apparent when you only periodically visit a corridor. You know, if you haven't been along the Troost corridor in 5 years and you visit it now, you're going to see something very different in terms of the level of activity on the ground and the presence of different businesses and venues there that weren't there before. And I'm not saying that to say that, you know, it's sort of we've reached the final report, we've reached, you know, the final level of success. It's just to say that, again, urban development is very granular. It happens very incrementally in an area like this.
Is there a block on Troost, perhaps, that you would say has changed in a significant way?
I might be going just a little bit more than 15 years back, but certainly one of the corners that has changed dramatically in that period of time is the corridor of 39th and Troost because of the ATA's transit center that has a whole range of neighborhood-oriented services located within it. And that was a very pioneering project in the sense that it was one of the first times that ATA itself took responsibility for developing and helping to develop a corner oriented towards transit and providing services for people who are accessing transit along that route.
We're going to be focusing in on the area between 24th and 31st Street on Troost. Mm-hmm. There's been a project called the Troost Avenue Streetscape, and that's been progressing relatively quickly, as I understand. Mm-hmm. Can you tell us about that?
Well, what we were talking about before with the overlay is a set of requirements that regulate private development and private businesses, so to speak. And the buildings on the street. Streetscape is about the street itself. It's about the sidewalks. It's about the character of the street as a corridor. And that relates to everything from the configuration of the lanes and the roadway to also, and probably more fundamentally important in an area like this, the degree of amenities that are inside. How wide and how deep are the sidewalks? Is there landscaping? Is there adequate pedestrian lighting? Things that have happened and things that are happening, and things that are also happening in a way that are not only going to enhance safety, they're not only going to create a better walking environment, things that could actually have an appreciable impact on the potential for economic development in the corridor in the future.
I mean, stuff like the slowing of traffic in certain areas, infrastructural changes that affect whether parts of the street flood or don't during a storm.
Exactly.
I mean, things that sound maybe, you know, when we talked with people on the street, there were hopes for more commercial activity, really ambitious kinds of things, more jobs. How does something as detail-oriented and physical as a change in how water floods on a portion of the street, how does that ultimately affect whether those bigger dreams can occur?
It's interesting because where infrastructure works effectively, you don't really notice it. But if it doesn't work, you really notice it. I mean, you could go to downtown Kansas City 15 years ago within the Central Business District, and, you know, there were wires strung and looped around poles and, you know, catch basins that were missing their covers and, you know, open pits and plates all over the streets. And if you talk to people about what do you dislike about downtown Kansas City, they'd say it just seems very messy and very untidy and very insecure and very unkempt. The same kind of thing exists in neighborhoods where you don't have that level of attention to detail. That missing attention is very conspicuous and it's very discomforting. I mean, not everybody necessarily sees it and says, you know, I don't feel comfortable there. But when you start to tease back, well, what is it that bothers you? Well, you know, there's litter everywhere. The sidewalks are broken apart. The sidewalks don't even flow continuously to the neighborhoods. It's hard to get from one place to another. When it rains really hard, the sewers back up and, you know, basements are flooded. All of those kinds of failings of infrastructure have a very, very direct impact. And, you know, throughout the city, but particularly on commercial corridors like Troost Avenue, those are challenges that have to be tackled in order for anyone to think seriously about investing, about creating that range of services and destinations that people would like to see happen there. It's necessary but not sufficient, though. I should say that as well in terms of making development move forward.
There's so much to talk about when we are talking about what to fix on Troost. Do we miss something, though, when we focus our attention that way? I mean, it's a street with a lot of history. Is there something about Troost worth preserving amid all this desire for change?
Oh, there are all kinds of things. And I think preservation is always fundamentally about two things simultaneously. On the one hand, it's about the physical preservation of the buildings, of the sites, of the places that are important to people. And there are some buildings, and not always even necessarily the highest architectural character, but that just have a sort of quaint neighborhood corridor, you know, vintage 1920s, 1940s, 1960s, whatever it might be, character along that entire segment of Troost. But just as fundamental are the stories. And that was alluded to in some of, in that opening segment, people remembering and reminiscing about the range of services and retail and the department stores that used to be there. Those stories and the stories of struggle and the stories of accomplishment are always very key in defining the character of an area.
Daniel Serta, stay with me, okay?
Mm-hmm.
When KCUR's Central Standard returns, we'll bring in some more of those voices from the ground on Troost, where we'll zoom in on the area between 24th and 31st Street. I'm Gina Kaufman. Stay tuned. Welcome back to KCUR's Central Standard. I'm Gina Kaufman. I've been talking to Daniel Serta, our urban design guru, about Troost and the gazillion different plans to rehabilitate the street. Now I want to hear from some people who live and work along Troost Avenue between 24th and 31st Streets. Let's talk to Gail Alexander. She's with us by phone from work at Aero Fabric Hair at 31st and Troost. Hi, Gail.
Hi. How are you this day?
Good. How are you?
I'm happy to be on, be in the conversation.
Good. Yeah, we're happy to have you. What's the role of Troost Avenue in your life?
Well, it's where I work, and I work on the corner of 39th. But, I was a bus person for a while, so.
What do you mean by a bus person?
I ride the bus. So Troost is, it's a good. It's good bus service, and it's even better now than it used to be, So, but as that guy was saying, I'm like him. Well, I've been around for a long time. The building there, the daycare on 31st Street, it's always been there since I remember, because there did used to be a store there. And I remember this because I used to buy fabric there. But we're talking a long time ago, but ever since then, it's been a daycare. Everybody identifies with that.
Everyone talks so much about what needs to change on Troost, what they hope for Troost, what they think should happen on Troost. What do you think of life on Troost right now?
It's better than it used to be, but it still could use some boosting.
In what ways? How do you think it could use some boosting?
Well, I'm just talking about some of the things that go on, and some of the things that go on Troost go on everywhere else. You know what I'm saying?
What kinds of things?
Some crime, drugs. Like I said, the same old thing that goes on, robbery,
You sound very casual about crime, drugs, and robbery.
Because it's kind of been a part of the way that it's been, down on Troost.
How do those things affect you in your daily life as someone who rides the bus and shows up at work right there? How do you encounter those aspects of life there?
Well, there are certain things that you do. Okay, if Troost was a place where the girls used to walk, the streetwalkers. So you know what time they are. So you go later or you go earlier.
Have you already, when people talk about change, what changes have you noticed on Troost?
Have I noticed? Okay, further down, I have noticed some shops opening up. you know, since they put the you know, school board building down there. I mean, you know, a lot of things I was telling the other day that I, you know, I'm in a different part of my life, so I don't do a lot of things that I used to do, you know?
But you've noticed new shops going in.
Oh, yes, yes.
What kinds of, if you got to just imagine one big change for Troost, and you could just make it happen by snapping your fingers, what would it be?
I think that it would be, I don't know. I wouldn't know how to do it, though, to bring the community together, you know, bring the people together, get us all on the same page. You know, like I say, everybody talks about the crime. And sometimes it seems like until it's really close to you, you don't get it. And then you have these people making groups and stuff. But just like I say, I think we need to learn to be decent people, better people.
Wow. So we've been talking about buildings and infrastructure, and you want to talk about people.
Well, isn't that part of it?
Yeah.
Because if we do all these things and we have the same attitude and people are breaking into the new buildings and they're keeping other people from kind of working on their dreams, it's not working.
Gail, thank you so much for talking with us. I know you're at work. Thank you so much for taking the time.
All right. Thank you.
And now let's talk to Spark Bookart. He's with us now. He's been a Longfellow resident since 2004. As president of the Troost Coalition, he got some zoning changes underway. Good morning, Spark.
Yeah, good morning, Gina. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for joining us. What brought you to the Longfellow neighborhood?
Just opportunity, you know, opportunity to be in a neighborhood that was transitioning when I got there.
What do you mean by transitioning?
Well, it was moving from a predominantly rental oriented neighborhood to one that was increasing in home ownership, increasing in individuals buying properties for the purpose of moving their families in. And I was starting a young family at that time, and I was a part of that that wave. I do want to make a quick correction. I'm not the president of the Troost Neighborhoods Coalition. We don't have a structure like that, but I do participate on the coalition.
What made you think that Troost needed zoning changes as someone who lived nearby?
Right. I think it's indeed instructive that the caller that you just had talked about the people aspect of Troost. And that's what was important to us as far as the neighborhoods. And just to describe briefly the neighborhood, the Troost Coalition, it was a process that was led by residents, meaning that we had representatives from every neighborhood along Troost between the viaduct and the creek. So all of those neighborhoods had representatives, and it was primarily brought together because, you know, there were things going on Troost that were that we felt was detrimental to our neighborhoods, and we thought we didn't have the capacity in order to fight each and every little battle. I mean, that would have wore any coalition out. So we felt that it needs to be in a broader framework, and that framework is what came out of the design guidelines. But the most important part is it was driven by residents.
Well, so you and other residents must have had some experience in your day-to-day life that made you think, we need zoning changes. Can you tell me what that was? What was it that zoning as it existed was doing to the neighborhoods from your perspective?
Yeah, excellent question, by the way. The important part was residents had a image or understanding of what they wanted Troost to look like, and businesses along Troost or businesses wanting to come to Troost had a totally different understanding and image of what Troost should look like.
What was the difference?
So residents more so wanted a nice place that was, like Daniel Sartre had talked about, that was walkable, that they could engage, that they can walk, that wasn't car-oriented, that they can go to a coffee shop or a deli or a bakery, or like this lady said, she used to buy fabric on Shoes. More of a neighborhood scale space to be. But what we were getting were dollar stores, car washes, automobile-oriented used car sales places, surface parking lots. And there was no way to really align those two needs without a context. So what we did was we felt that you talked about all the plans, you know, and we looked at that as a challenge too. One of the things that we constantly heard is we've been planned to death on Truce. And that was a pretty accurate assessment. But the important part was we wanted residents to drive the planning. And that's what happened. I mean, the residents came together and said, we need to make Truce the place that we want to make it. We want it to be a plan that's worthy of being adopted by the city council. So we're going to need expertise and support. But the most important part is residents drove the process.
What were the changes that you put forward and that were adopted?
Exactly like Daniel sort of talked about earlier. We wanted to make sure that it was encoded in law that we set the framework and the groundwork for. We set the framework and the groundwork for a walkable neighborhood scale corridor. And you can't do that if while you're trying to do that, a used car lot can just pop up. And I mean, it's almost like going in two different directions.
What would be, for example, the problem with a used car lot? I mean, how would that contradict what it is you want to see?
Okay, so you got to look at the space on Truce as a scarce space, meaning there's a small pie. Okay, and then if you want to do something that's neighborhood scale, you have to make sure that the use of the space on Truce, you get the most bang for the buck for every parcel that's there. Well, if you put a used car lot, and there are several on Truce, and if you continue to put more used car lots there, what happens is you reduce the amount of pie so that you can't do neighborhood scale developments to put residents, which is one of the things that we really wanted. We wanted Truce not to be a pure commercial corridor, but we wanted people to live on Truce.
It sounds like you're saying, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but you know, like a used car lot is someplace you're not going to go there every weekend and hang out. You're going to go there once every few years, probably max, to get a car, and that you're going to come and you're going to go, and that's going to be that. Whereas you could go to a coffee shop and hang out,
or home,
right? Yeah,
exactly. That's exactly the point. I mean, if 30-40% of your space is used up for activities that bring people from outside of that particular community in order to engage in, what it does is it leaves little space or little opportunity for the neighborhood that actually lives in and around Truce, opportunities to engage Truce.
If you live or work on Truce and you want to tell us what you think the plans and initiatives either should be or tend to miss, call 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. You can also talk to us and to each other on Twitter. We are at KCURCST and use the hashtag IfYouBuildItKC. Let's talk now with Father Justin Matthews. He's with us from Reconciliation Services on Truce and the St. Mary of Egypt Church. Hi, Justin.
Good morning.
I should probably call you Father, but I've known you since we were like 12, so I don't know if I can do it. I'm sorry.
It'll work, no problem.
So I'll call you Justin.
Sounds good.
Okay. Talk to me a little bit about the journey that brought you from the suburban background we shared in high school to your current existence working on Truce and living nearby.
So I grew up in Kansas City, and like many in Kansas City who lived west of Truce, whether it was given directly to me or not, I couldn't say, but there was always a sense that you didn't go east of Truce. And I think one of the pieces of the conversation that has to be brought in is the reality of the racial segregation, which still exists in our city, but which created Troost in many ways. And my journey was one that, as I entered into ministry as a priest, I began to learn more about putting people first rather than programs or even places.
Or plans?
Or plans. But they all interrelate. So after living in other cities, cities like New York, cities like Dallas, cities like Nashville, that were all experiencing rapid growth and had very similar problems in different areas, I realized that as I came back to Kansas City, we have an opportunity to do our redevelopment differently. And I wanted to participate in that. So my wife and I and our three kids sold our house and moved east of Troost into the community so that we wouldn't be commuters to our community, but would actually be participants.
Forgive me, but I don't know a lot about Greek Orthodoxy, and I'm wondering what the relationship is between your work as a priest at a particular kind of congregation and your work in the city, specifically on Troost.
Great. Well, you know, I'm an Orthodox Christian priest, and one of the core tenets of our faith is this idea that everyone is created in the image of God. And that's something that many faiths share. But the theological approach that we take as Orthodox Christians is very centered on a word we would say veneration. And that concept of veneration means to give profound and authentic respect and dignity to the person in front of you. So that informs our work at Reconciliation Services every day. When people walk in to our organization, which is not the church. We're a very eclectic group of people at Reconciliation Services. Even though I, as an Orthodox Christian priest, am the executive director, we have people from all walks of life that join us. But we all ascribe to this understanding that is very much rooted in an Orthodox Christian framework that says that every person is worthy of that veneration. And so, unlike a lot of places where if you are in need, it's very much like the DMV, you know, take a number, get an appointment. There's not a lot of dignity in that interaction. We try at Reconciliation Services to let veneration and that Orthodox theopraxis inform our work.
With that emphasis on people and their dignity, I mean, I wonder what you think of what Gail told us a little while ago, that, you know, we've been talking about infrastructure, and that's, of course, the changes, you know, changes in zoning. Those are bureaucratic changes on some level, but they affect people. And Gail's concern is for people. How do you see bureaucratic development changes affecting human beings on Troost?
Well, as you look at the development that has happened and that is happening on Troost, there really is a divergent approach. Some approach it simply from an economic standpoint. Here are these blighted buildings. Here are these ugly places that we want to make beautiful. And if we do that, then, you know, redevelopment will take place.
And of course, even ugly and beautiful are so subjective.
Of course. Very good point. But the other side of the coin would say that, look, the people who are here want to participate in this process. And not only want to participate in it, but deserve to participate in it. For years, these neighborhoods east of Troost, particularly in the UNI catchment area, the Urban Neighborhood Initiative area that we work in as Reconciliation Services, these neighborhoods have labored. There are plan after plan to read, and I wouldn't say that any of them are complete, but they contribute to a whole. So when Gail talked about her experience of crime, her experience of fear was sort of underneath what she experienced on the bus or in the community. But you said she's very casual about it. This goes to the core of what's happening. People live in systemic, complex trauma that is generational. And we can address the blight of buildings all day long. But if we don't also address the blight of the heart, then poverty just moves. We'll have a revitalized Troost, but we won't have the kind of community that the residents and that we as Kansas Cityans want and can have.
You know, Justin, a lot of people we talked to on Troost and, you know, by calling different organizations, a lot of people nominated you as the person we should be talking to about changes on Troost and about improvements on Troost. And what year again did you move to the area?
Well, I grew up in Kansas City. I moved back in late 2008.
And so that's when you became part of this particular community?
Yeah, I was a volunteer with Reconciliation Services. And our founder, Father David Alschult, is very well known. And so Reconciliation Services was founded by he and his wife, who actually were an interracial couple from the 80s that struggled through much. And it was out of their suffering that true reconciliation was born. And their marriage became very instructive.
I want to get to that if we can, but I'm really curious about how it happened that in the years since 2008, you became so deeply involved. I mean, what got you involved in efforts that went beyond, you know, the inside of your building's walls?
Well, I'm one of the newcomers to this. I'm certainly a newer voice, and I appreciate what you said about the nomination. I don't know that I deserve that, but I feel like my personal convictions manifest themselves in unique ways at the corner of 31st and Troost, because as a priest, I wake up wanting to bring the hope and healing that my faith can offer. But at the same time, I wake up recognizing that there are structural biases, there are roadblocks in the way for reconciliation and hope and healing to take place. So the work that we do with the community, we're one of many partners, but I feel like we're all aligned together because we want to see something great in our city.
What kinds of things have you done?
So Reconciliation Services provides a full continuum of care. And I'll give our piece, which is one of many pieces in the community, but we provide social emergency services, therapeutic services, and economic community building. And those last two pieces are really important. And that's where I think we found a lot of community tie-in. We have to bring deep trauma therapy, PTSD therapy, to a community that needs healing. But we can't just bring therapeutic services and emergency social services to the equation if people don't have the ability to build wealth, the ability to thrive in their community. They won't be able to participate in these new shops and these new stores. So Reconciliation Services this year launched a social venture called Resolve Staffing. And this year we employed 285 people. The overwhelming majority of them came from the community east of Troost. And it's that collaboration that is going to bring the kind of healing and reconciliation to Troost that will make it thrive for generations.
We'll pick right back up with this conversation about Troost after the break, starting with your calls at 816-235-2888. I'm Gina Kaufman, KCUR Central Standard. We'll be right back. I'm Gina Kaufman. Welcome back to KCUR's Central Standard. We're talking about Troost and how the rubber meets the road, so to speak, with all the different plans to rehabilitate the street. Daniel Serta of Insight, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
And Father Justin Matthews of Reconciliation Services and the St. Mary of Egypt Church, hello to you.
Good morning.
We are also joined by Spark Book Art, formerly with the Troost Coalition, and that worked on zoning changes. He's also been a Longfellow resident since 2004. Hi, Spark.
Ah, great. Thank you.
So let's talk to our callers. We've got Peter with us. Peter is calling from Troost. Hi, Peter.
Hi, how are you this morning?
Good. How about you?
Good.
What do you want to share with us?
Well, a couple things. One is I wanted to address the issue of crime just briefly. You know, I live in the 3300 block of Troost Avenue, and there was a time when this block was one of the worst areas for crime. It's not that now, partly because the residents have done a couple things. They've engaged with some social service agencies to deal with some of the crime problems, but they've also shown a low tolerance, sometimes even a zero tolerance, of things like random gunfire.
What do you mean by zero tolerance, though? I imagine if I don't tolerate gunfire, do I just walk outside and say, stop it? I mean, what does that mean?
No, people can get used to it. In other words, you know, if it happens often enough, no one calls the police. So we basically worked with people in our neighborhood and with the police to make sure that if there's an incident of random gunfire, people network with each other. They sometimes share emails with the police as it's happening about what they're seeing and what they're hearing. And so that's been a part of it. Drug houses, you know, in the police, it's not just a police action that we're expecting or asking for. If there's a prostitute on the street, there are some Catholic nuns and some other social workers that work in the area that work with prostitutes on Truce Avenue. And we've managed, I think, as a group, as a community, to reduce the amount of that activity in our area. Quite frankly, I don't know whether we pushed some of that activity elsewhere.
Okay.
Or if some of these folks have actually moved on to a better life. But I do know in some cases it's been the latter, that some of these folks have moved on.
Have left the area. Okay, Peter, thank you so much for calling. And I want to talk to some of our in-studio guests to get a response to some of what Peter has shared. Spark, we want to jump in?
Yeah, I think it's important to recognize, as Pete talked about, really a lot of the momentum and action that has occurred on the Truce Corridor is really what has been a result of residents of the neighborhoods surrounding Truce, that border Truce, getting engaged, getting involved, getting finding their own way to address issues that impact their lives. And, you know, that's the mantra I beat, because this thing has to be resident driven.
Let's talk to Michael in Midtown. Michael, thanks for joining us.
Yep.
What do you want to share?
Well, I had a couple questions, and I've always thought this. I worked on Truce working with case manager working with different people in the area, and they always have a hard time getting to jobs that are down south and sometimes up north. And I've always wondered why, when they were talking about doing light rail or different types of transit, why it was never discussed putting something on Truce on account of it's very wide. It used to have an own trolley on it, and it actually could bring the city together in terms of putting transportation there where businesses would grow. And you could actually, people that are living off Truce, to actually incorporate them into those businesses and starting their own businesses. It just never made any sense to me, with a huge power line above it and the straightest path all the way from north all the way to south, why nobody ever spoke that from an engineering point of view, or even from a, you know, human social aspect of bringing the city together, what used to be actually a separating, dividing line.
Let me get an answer to that, or if not an answer, some feedback from Daniel Serta.
I think there's a couple things important. My understanding is that there have been considerations, whether it was light rail or other planning efforts, particularly in the late 90s and early 2000s, that did look at the Truce Corridor. I know the Truce Corridor has been looked at for streetcar as well. I mean, things in transit investments in the city, there are far more challenges and far more needs than there have been available resources to tackle. But I think the larger point that you make is really fundamentally important, which is there are people that need access to opportunity. And there is ongoing planning within ATA, looking at the routes and looking at the connectivity. We do have Truce Max operating now.
We spoke with Gail, who said she thought that the bus service there being excellent is part of why
she's
working.
It's a higher rate of service, more frequent. But I will be the first person to tell you, I'm one of the, Spark is the word, beating the drum. I beat the drum all the time for the reality that we need to put far more in the way of resources than we have as a metropolitan community into public transit and making jobs particularly accessible by public transit.
Let's talk to Elon, who is calling actually from Denver. And I have another disclosure of knowing one of our guests from my school days. Elon, we went to college together. And I believe when you told me that you just realized life was meaningless, I told you you'd get used to it. And I'm sorry about that. I don't think that life is meaningless anymore.
That's a funny memory. I hadn't thought of that in a long time.
I seem to recall causing you a bit of a crisis there, and I do apologize. So anyway, what are you calling to share today?
Well, it's been a few years since freshman year. Well, I'm very excited to be part of the Truce Corridor, that I've gotten the opportunity to get to do development along Truce. and listening to everybody talk. I'm hoping that the things that we're working on will address some of the things that Sparky brought up and Father Brian brought up.
Well, Elon, what is it that you're doing on Troost?
Sure. We're working on the old Wonder Bread building, bringing a mixed-use development into the Wonder Bread building. We're putting in 20,000 feet of office workshop space that'll hopefully create some jobs, about 15,000 feet of retail space, and then apartments.
How did you become interested in a building on Troost? You live in Denver.
It's a true story. I, through the varieties of real estate, met an architect named Caleb Buland, who is a Kansas City-based architect who works on historic renovations. Historic renovations aren't really that possible in Denver. We just don't have that much housing stock that's historic. We tore down a lot of our city in the 60s and 70s. And also, we weren't rich in the early part of the century, so we didn't build great buildings. Kansas City built amazing buildings in the early part of the 1900s and preserved a lot of them. And so there's not a great opportunity to get to build in historic buildings. And in one way, I think it's kind of a blessing that I don't have the history on Troost, because when I saw the building, I said, this is an amazing street. Everything's wonderful here. I don't see any reason why somebody wouldn't want to do a great project here.
Right.
And it took me a long time to actually understand that Troost had this history.
Yeah.
And so for me, it was fresh eyes. I got the opportunity to meet folks throughout the Longfellow neighborhood and also in the Beacon Hill area.
Elon, I want to keep hearing you, but we are coming up on the end of the show, and I want to hear what people have to say about this, because you've got smiles and nods and laughter going on in the studio, and I want to hear what people are thinking. Justin?
Elon, I love your spirit that you're bringing to this, and I think one of the opportunities that you have in Kansas City, and I look forward to perhaps meeting you to talk about this, is, as you've heard from all three of us, you have a community that's willing to walk with the developers who are willing to walk with the community. It's not an adverse environment to development. We can manage gentrification. We can work together to see all ships rise together. But it's going to take intentionality, and it's going to take listening and conversation. And there are lots of efforts to do that. So especially when you have somebody coming from outside of the community to invest in our community, I love when those folks engage with the community that's here. Troost has been a racial and economic dividing line for generations, and frankly, going all the way back to the middle of the 1800s, when the corner of 31st and Troost was actually the southwest corner of a slave plantation. There has never been a time when Troost was not segregated and divided. And so as a result, there's a lot to unpack. And so what we need, and I guess if there's a drum I would beat, it would be not only community engagement, but a trauma-informed community development awareness.
What does that mean? How does a developer take trauma into account?
So trauma is like sediment at the bottom of the ocean. There are layer upon layer of trauma from violence and crime and just the violence of poverty itself. So when a developer comes in, if a developer like Elon has a heart for the community, as it sounds that like he does, one of the great boons that developer can add to the process is actually to bring resources to the community that allow for that trauma to be addressed as well, so all ships can rise together.
So what about this piece of it where he's talking about, like, he's going to, that this is going to create jobs, this is going to create new residences, and that with fresh eyes he sees opportunity, not blight?
Yeah, that's a very important piece, and it's important because, you know, as residents of Troost, we see this opportunity. We also see the challenge. And the good thing about the Neighborhoods Coalition that's happened real quickly is that we've been able to vet these projects. You know, the city, you know, says, look, you need to go talk to the Troost Neighborhoods Coalition. You know, they've done a lot of the groundwork. So we get to talk to a lot of these developers before they come and do it. And that's a departure from how it's been in the past.
Our time is up, but Spark Booker, Longfellow resident and with us from the Troost Coalition, thank you.
No, thank you.
And Father Justin Matthews of Reconciliation Services, thank you.
Thank you.
Daniel Serta of Insight Planning, it's great to see you as always.
Thank you, Gina. I appreciate the opportunity to be here.
You can listen back to this conversation at kcur.org/centralstandard later today. And keep talking about Troost on Twitter. We are at KCURCST. Use the hashtag IfYouBuildItKC. Tomorrow, humor, art, and ethnicity. Join that discussion tomorrow at 10. KCUR's Central Standard is produced by Matthew Long Middleton, Sylvia Maria Gross, Andrea Tudhope, Jen Chen, and Suzanne Hogan. Our interns are Aaron Pelish and Raven Brooks. I'm Gina Kaufman. Up to Date is next. Don't miss it.